What is good, ladies and gentlemen? We are back. I know you're used to seeing the three screens. We're going to do a two-man today. You know, everybody's schedule is a little different, but one thing we guarantee you this season is we're going to be consistent with our baseball content. It's your boy, Dante Miles, back in the building. You know where to follow me. Got my guy, Sid, in the building. Sid, how you feeling, bro?
I've been worse, but I've certainly been better.
Yeah, and you know, and I'm glad you said that because we're going to get right into the juiciest part of this quick 30, 45-minute talk we got with y'all, man. The NL East, the Braves are surging, and everybody else is not. That's the polite way of putting it, you know. That's the nice way to put it, but right now, the Atlanta Braves are in first in the NL East. Let me pull up the standings real quick. The Braves are currently 23-10. They play the Colorado Rockies tonight. They are 7.5 games up. And while everybody listening to this is probably going to say, hey, bro, it's May 2nd. What are you doing? We all remember last year when the Braves started 0-7 and barely missed the playoffs. So I understand baseball is 162. It's not football where it's a 17-game schedule. But these months matter. And so unlike last year, the Atlanta Braves have really – the schedule maker did them a favor. You know, it wasn't Padres, then Dodgers. It wasn't that gauntlet.
And it wasn't the West Coast trip. The Mets, so for comparison, okay, the Mets have been on two West Coast trips already.
Yeah.
Oh man.
We started our first one yesterday against Colorado.
Yeah. Yeah. We lost and they swept us at home. So there's no excuse. But quick question on the Braves, since we're starting with them. You think they're better than the 2023 team?
It's too early to say that. It's too early to say that. I love the fact that the first team to 20 wins. And more importantly, the fact that it's not your typical stars who are leading the show. Right. Matt Olson is a guy who doesn't get the respect he deserves, and we'll get into that in a second. But Ozzy's had a hell of a start to the season. So far right now, let me pull up his numbers. Ozzy is hitting he's hitting 320 with a 908 OPS, 7 home runs, 41 hits, 24 runs.
Ah, man.
And remember, last year, I think we kind of forgot how much of a luxury Ozzy is as a hitter.
Right.
Like, when he's actually, you know, putting the ball in the plate, putting the ball out of the ballpark, this lineup goes from being very good to dangerous.
Yeah.
And with a guy like Ozzy who's killing it right now, Michael Harris, he started off slow last year. It's been the exact opposite. If you look at his baseball savant, everything is red. Like, everything is red. He's currently hitting 324 with a 927 OPS. He also has 7 home runs. He has 33 hits. And so when you have two guys who are obviously they're parts of the core, but they're not Ronnie. They're not, you know. They're not Matt. They're not the guys that you expect to actually drive the engine. But when these guys are hitting this well, which allows Ronnie to be hitting the cover off the ball, but he just so happens to be hitting it at people every damn time almost, it's a good problem to have, bro. And I think with the Braves this year, Walt Weiss, we've joked about this in the press box. Joked about this in the press box, but ever since he tackled Soler, that told this team, hey, this is our guy.
We have a fight. We have someone who's willing to fight. And the managerial thing is – that's a hot button right now, especially in the NL East, because, you know, we have people in New York calling for Mendoza's head every day. Rob Thompson has been fired. Alex Cora across the way in the AL East has been fired. And two managers fired before Memorial Day. That's not common. It's not common.
It's a tough division this year, and I think it's because you've seen the success that's come out of this division. So like guys see these early struggles and they say, wait a minute, like we can't let this hole get too deep because this is a division that things swing, things sway. We can sit here. I talk my Atlanta Braves crap all the time, but it's a dogfight every year. Like, even the years when they were consistently running off divisions, they were winning it by a game last week of the season, that type of vibe. It's not where they just dogpile people. So for them to have a 7.5 game lead May 2nd and an opportunity to build on that lead, this is something that I don't think that they shouldn't take this lightly.
And with pitching reinforcements coming because Spencer Strider
Yes
come back.
Yes. You're talking about a team that has a potential six-man rotation. Like, they have options. Like, a lot of teams these days, I feel like they'll – and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like a lot of teams, they'll go with, okay, give me 3.5 solid starters. That fourth guy, fifth guy, you give me 5 innings, I'll let the bullpen work it and figure it out. That's where most teams go these days. So for the Braves to now, you're walking to a point with Strider's on his way back. Schwellenbach is still rehabbing, but he's getting stronger. Where you have a very, very viable option of having 5 starters and guys who can eat innings with the Grant Holmes, who probably go back to the bullpen. Ronaldo Lopez has been moved to the bullpen where he probably should be right now, just based off the fact his velocity is just too inconsistent to stay as a starter. So you have all of that. And before we switch it up, but I'm going to go right to the guy that I talked about earlier, Matt Olson. This is somebody I've been here for his entire Atlanta Braves tenure. I was here for the end of the Freddie tenure. And like, there's still some small lingering feelings about we miss Freddie, like very small. Like, he doesn't get the same super 5-minute standing ovation that he would get when he first came back, but you still have guys who will mention him. But right. I think right now, this is a guy whose OPS is 1.011, 10 home runs, 38 hits, 29 runs. Matt hasn't missed a game since he got here. Let's talk about that. He is the current MLB Iron Man. Matt Olson's at like 750.
Really?
Games. Yes. He doesn't miss games. He doesn't miss games. He doesn't take games off. Yes. So like, having a cornerstone like that, because he truly is a cornerstone. And I think, you know, we get so caught up in superstars. But one thing I love is a guy that you can pretty much, Gary Sheffield said this. He was like, bro, before the year starts, you can write it in pen. I'm going to hit 300, 30 home runs, 100 RBIs. I'm going to walk 100 times. That's what I do. He said this on the podcast a couple days ago. And like, when you look down his career, it was facts. So when you get a guy like Matt Olson, 30 home runs, 110, 120 RBIs. I don't care about the average. The OPS is always going to be in the 8s to 9s. This is a guy who is one of those quiet cornerstones that you say, okay, you just sit there and be great, and we'll build around you and figure this out.
And what a luxury. Yeah, insane. What a luxury to have. To just, you know, a quiet 1.1 OPS, like that's not a luxury. Like, that's a superstar is what you have. And, you know, I say this as an objective baseball watcher, the brand of baseball that the Braves play, it's fun to watch. It's, you know, there's combinations. You can, you know, they have a chance to do something as long as the ball gets in play. And, you know, we talk about this, or we're probably not even probably, we're going to talk about this later, but, you know, just being able to, one, command the strike zone as a hitter, and two, being able to command the base path as, you know, as a strong team on the base pass, and like, being able to use your young flexibility, and talking about young flexibility, talking about, he's young, Mike Piazza. Oh gosh,
Drake Baldwin.
Yeah.
A monster, bro. Monster.
Just luxuries out the wazoo, man. And it's so much fun to know that the game is in semi good hands, because like, these guys, like, not to say they're ageless wonders, but like, we have, like we said, the combination of young guys and old guys. To which we don't have to talk about we miss Freddie Freeman anymore. We're now talking about how long can we keep Michael Harris? How long is Acuna going to be able to do all the things that he does? And if you have a manager who people are willing to go to bat for, that means they're going to try to stay healthy. They're going to want to fight. They're going to want to post up every single day. So like, they got a winning combination down there in Atlanta, man.
Absolutely, bro. You're absolutely right. And I'm sitting here looking at the standings before we move on, because I do want to give you a second to talk about the Mets for a bit. Not even trying to be funny. Like, I'm being dead serious. Being dead serious, because I mean, it's one of those situations where we didn't expect this.
Weird.
The payroll being what it is, and like, even though we know that doesn't guarantee winning, but even this, the fact that the whole mindset, the mentality coming into this season with the Mets was, we brought in talent. We're going to win. Like, you know, we're not some small market team. We're going to show you that we're a big market team. Cohen has done everything that I would want my owner to do, like, exactly. In terms of flipping a roster over, spending more money. So as much as people are trying to crack jokes at him, I think that's low hanging fruit. The same way people try to joke at Ishbia in Phoenix for spending all the money to get Kate. It's like, no, he's trying. Like, it didn't work, but I'll give you that. So, Sid, talk to me a bit just about the current slide. I know people have been criticizing Soto because he said he didn't talk to his teammates while he was rehabbing. But just talk to us real quick about the Mets.
So where to start? I guess we can start at the top. From what people, or from what David Stearns, the president of baseball operations, said about the Mets is, hey, we want to focus on run prevention. And what everyone thought that meant is we need to be defensively perfect at every position. No, wrong, incorrect. He's talking about pitching. He's talking about how we did not have a starter who could go more than five innings through an entire year, sans David Peterson three times. What does he do? Freddie Peralta. Not exactly your post five innings kind of guy, but he's a good pitcher. We have Nolan McLean. He's a workhorse, the cosmopolitan cowboy, as I like to call him. He posts. He's a, I think, like a sub like 2.5 ERA with everyone's talking about the curveball and the changeup and everything like that and the RPMs. And then surprisingly, and not surprising to me, but surprising to people who are fairly new or not aware, Clay Holmes. Clay Holmes has been absolutely fantastic. And, you know, the disappointments have been Kodai Senga, David Peterson, and Sean Manaea. Sean Manaea got the legacy deal with deferred money. You have to give it to him because, you know, he was your ace through a playoff run that sets you into the NLCS championship. David Peterson, the question was always, hey, how sustainable is his success generating the ground ball and, you know, with his 92, 94 fastball? And again, like, it didn't work. And so what can you do is put reset payroll. Same thing with Kodai Senga. You know, everyone points to the Pete Alonso moment and when he strained his calf and pointed that. And prior to that, he had a 2.37 ERA into his rookie year or coming off of his rookie year. So, you know, but the offense is obviously the story here because the pitching is fine. The defense is fine, but they are last place in every offensive metric possible, which is unfortunate. But, you know, a lot of people around baseball have said, hey, this time it's going to take time to get adjusted. It's going to take time to do the things for the team. Bo Bichette is waking up. Juan Soto is coming off of a strained calf where he missed 12 games. Francisco Lindor, he even said, I don't even really care about what the injury report says because I'm not used to not posting. And again, Francisco Lindor he posts every single day at shortstop. And so now we're trying to plug and play pieces, which is fine. But, you know, Juan Soto is hitting like 334. He's going to hit his 40 bombs. He's going to steal his 20, 30 bases. Bo Bichette, he'll come around. And there's a lot of young guys whose names had question marks on them. Mark Vientos, Brett Beatty, Francisco Alvarez, and Ronnie Mauricio. Ronnie Mauricio apparently loves to play in California with home runs against the Dodgers, the Angels, the Padres, and the Giants. And then with his game winning home run last night against the Angels, which again is, you know, if you can go on the road, especially in the West Coast, and win a game and start to build some momentum, it's May 2nd. And this is not to say that April didn't matter. April absolutely matters. They're 11-21 in the standings, for God's sakes. But you can turn this ship around. It's only 7.5 games out right now. And then for what we know, the Phillies are just as bad as we thought they would be with no form of consistency. Like, I think baseball media as a whole has kind of put the Phillies in this world eater category because of the history of Bryce Harper. That has not been the case. Like, they've lost to the Braves. They've lost to the Mets. They've lost in the World Series. And you know, what can you do? You can fire your manager, I guess. And then they even went out to ask Alex Cora, hey, how much money is it going to take to get you over here? And Alex Cora said, I want to be a parent for a little while.
He'll be there next year. He'll be there.
Oh, yes, he will. Yeah, he will. He'll either be there or with the Mets. I love Carlos Mendoza as a manager. But, you know, when baseball media says, hey, you know, we're calling for names, we're calling for whatever, the core of the Mets is not going to change anytime soon, right? This was the change.
Yeah.
And so now I've said this in our chats as a joke. I've said this on Twitter as a joke. You're going to build around Juan Soto and his Hispanic friends, and that's what we're doing. And so, like, you know, but you can't consistently fire staff over and over and over with no continuity and just be like, we'll just try again and reload. And the Steve Cohen thing we talked about, he's doing everything in his power. He's effectively saying, hey, payroll, 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 payroll. I don't care about results. Payroll, 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 payroll. That's what I want my owner to do. Like, that's what I want the owner of my team to do. Because what else are you supposed to do as a baseball owner? Tell them, no, you can't have money. That's what all the other owners do. So, no, we don't want that. Do I think we probably should have brought Pete Alonso back? For sure. But, like, we're talking about long-term sustainability of a franchise and what is possible. Pete Alonso is not off to a great start in Baltimore, except for when he plays the Yankees, because he loves hitting against them. But I stand by the Nimmo trade. I stand by getting rid of Jeff McNeil. I stand by the youth movement. So is it a tough sell for fans? For sure. But, like, we've been through worse. We've gone through this with an owner who doesn't care about baseball. We've been through this with an owner who doesn't care about giving people their due. There was a point where Jeff Wilpon said, hey, it really don't make sense for us to have Bryce Harper and Manny Machado on our team.
My owner said that too. So some of the dumbest stuff ever, but it was said by multiple owners. So you're not wrong.
Oh man, we can't have $200-300 million players on the payroll. Shut up.
We can't have two future Hall of Famers on the team. Of course not.
Boy, man, look,
crazy.
It's tough seas, but hey, the NL East is the NL East. The Marlins will eventually sell off whatever they're doing. The Phillies will succumb to age, and then I think it'll come down to a two-man race between the Mets and the Braves, as everyone in the baseball industry, everyone around us, has continued to say over the years. So, you know.
Yeah, I think for the next few years we'll be locked into this Mets Braves. It'll be a two team race. I think the Phillies are gonna fall, even keeping Harper and Schwarber is strengthening his Hall of Fame case every game he plays. Like, Kyle Schwarber is fucking amazing.
300 home runs the other day, like 300 career homers. Yeah.
Schwarber's a monster. And so we're going to see this division is going to be extremely exciting. But speaking of Kyle Schwarber, it's a perfect segue into the next guy we're about to talk about. My guy, the best free agent pickup of the offseason.
Yeah.
The guy everybody passed on. They were scared to hit the ball. I'm talking about, of course, Munetaka Murakami from the Chicago White Sox. This kid has been as advertised, 26 years old, man. Let me just pull up some numbers real quick. He's currently hitting .239, but he has an OPS of 967, leads the major leagues in home runs in 13. He has 27 hits. He does not have a double yet. He has 27 hits. 13 are home runs. The rest are singles. But it builds the point, because what we're about to talk about real quick. But, man, his K rate is high. 32%. Whiff rate, swing and miss, 43%. But his walk rate, he's in the 98th percentile, 19% of the time. So we're talking about, I joked about this when we signed him. I said he's going to be the Korean Adam Dunn. Worst case scenario, best case scenario, he's the Korean Kyle Schwarber. He's looking a lot like Kyle Schwarber. Let me say Japanese, no disrespect to his people. He's looking a lot like Kyle Schwarber right now. He is a true three outcome hitter. It is a home run, it is a walk, or he's striking out. It is what it is. But right now, we will take that. And the Chicago White Sox, surprising a lot of people right now, they have, I want to say 14. Let me see. They have 15 wins. They're 15 and 17. They're two games below 500.
They had 15 wins like until June last year?
Yes.
Like,
yes. Yes. Last year was bad. Munetaka and Colson Montgomery, I was calling them baby Corey Seager. He's the truth. He has 30 home runs.
He was on my players to watch. He was on my players to watch this year on the first part of the season.
Brother.
Him and Kyle Teal.
Yeah. And we're still waiting on Kyle Teal to get back. He's been out with the hamstring. He's been battling since the World Baseball Classic to get back. But I want to talk about Munetaka for two reasons. We talk about, you know, three outcome hitters. This is something that a lot like with the three-point line in the NBA. This is something in baseball that's new, but it's a constant. It's here. It's not going anywhere. Power matters. Walking matters. And they'll take that even if you hit 220. But if you hit 40 home runs and walk 95 times, who cares? Who cares? That's just the way we are with the game. So real quick, just talk about all of the teams that missed on Murakami, the teams that were, you know, just so concerned with him not being able to hit velo, despite the fact that during his career in the KBO, him and Shohei Ohtani had similar numbers against high-velocity pitchers. Shohei had a much smaller sample size, but in the 4 years where Murakami played in the KBO, he struggled against high-velocity pitchers. So that's why a lot of teams passed on him, because they were concerned with his ability to hit velocity. But my thing, and we talked about this a little bit in the pre-show, when you have a strong command of the strike zone, he's currently first among batters in ABS challenges. So that gives you...
Is he?
Yes. That gives you a hint into how good his eye is at the plate. So when you have that, this is a guy who punishes strikes. And let me reemphasize that. He punishes strikes. His barrel rate is currently... Let me see. His barrel rate is in the 99th percentile. He barrels up 23.5% of pitches thrown his way. And when you have a guy who walks 20% of the time, he barrels it up 23% of the time, have one hell of a problem at the plate.
That means 49%. That's 49%. Oh, man.
That's half of his at-bats.
That's literally just under half.
Like, the reason I wanted to say these numbers out loud is because people were quick to just brush it off and say, I think, you know, it's still, you know, we're Americans. We know how Americans are, even though we black and we give people more leeway than everybody else. We understand when people are coming to America, you're coming to our game. We have that, you know, that American exceptionalism where this is our game. You're going to struggle. You're going to have to adjust. And this guy's like, well, no, guys, I can hit a baseball. Like, I can do this.
Right. I think with, you know, the way that the cultural diffusion of baseball, like you said, has looked very much like the three-point revolution of the NBA, where we are looking at a different style than what we are used to, but like we're kind of still saying the same thing, right? We're not saying that hitting the ball in field is bad. We are saying that, hey, we should maximize our swings. Like in the NBA, hey, we should maximize our offensive output by only taking the shots that make sense. And if you are an elite hitter, you know, Barry Bonds says it, Ken Griffey says it, all the guys say it. If you're an elite hitter, you're never trying to hit home runs. You're trying to command the strike zone, and you're just trying to get a barrel onto the ball. And everything else will happen the perfect way that way. And so the diffusion of this is not a – it's interesting to see, because, like, from the pitching standpoint, we've seen Roki Sasaki kind of be eh, but we've also seen Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who everyone says, how are you giving this guy $325 million for not pitching yet? Guys, he knows how to throw a baseball. Like,
yeah.
But to the teams that missed out on Mr. Murakami, like, ah, man. Like,
And he's also, he's giving you a masterclass. Cause like, for example, I have another guy pulled up. Cause I, one thing I baseball savant is one of the best things MLB best has done in a very ever. Long time. In a very yeah. long time. You have a guy like Chandler Simpson, who's hitting 314. He's squaring up 98% of the balls that he hits, but his barrel rate is in the first percentile, the lowest percentile. So that's why you see
doubles then.
Yeah, that's how you see a 314 average, but his OPS is 701. And that's going to lead us to this second part of the conversation.
Arias numbers.
Jeez. Yeah. As we can, as you know, as this game continues to grow, and I still think baseball has the strongest grasp of analytics. Like the analytics we use in baseball, yeah, they make sense.
Most sense.
Yeah, it's not a lot of questions you need to ask. But, you know, when we get into this OPS versus batting average conversation, is it time to finally just retire this? Because, I mean, we're at a point in the league where you only have two or three guys who actually hit over 300 by the end of the season. Like,
and Aaron Judge and Juan Soto.
Bro, and another point, and I was just thinking about, I meant to text this to the group chat, but I was thinking about it. Think about our former batting champions who are now falling off a cliff. Like those heavy contact guys who are barely, like Tim Anderson's not in the league anymore. DJ LeMahieu, what do the Yankees even do with him now? Exactly. Like Arias, we love him, but he's not getting the praise he was
supposed to. He was squaring stuff up in the WBC, man.
That's the only time he does it. That's the only time he squares the ball up. Like, barrels it, like, actually tries to drive it. It's a WBC. So, with that being said, like I said, the game is continuing to change, but analytics are the strongest in baseball. Is it time to officially retire this OPS versus batting average conversation? Because I still talk to a few guys when I'm at the ballpark who are true old school. They say, give me batting average, home runs, RBIs. Now, us as youngsters, we say, well, RBIs are just contingent on where you are in the lineup. If I put three guys in front of you who get on base, you better drive in 120 RBIs. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, you should be doing that. So how do you feel about this conversation, man?
Because analytics are what they are, you need all of them. Like, you know, they're all a piece of the puzzle. I don't necessarily care for batting average too much, but like, you know, they're all pieces of the puzzle that make it so that, you know, they tell a story one way or another, and like, you can still use a batting average to still maximize, like, or optimize and maximize your lineup. Like if Chandler Simpson is hitting singles and doubles, cool. Put a guy with a super high OPS right in front of him. Like, you're going to drive someone in eventually. But, you know, as we go to more games across the country, and this is something that I've been focusing on for the past few years, honestly, we see less and less about batting averages on the scoreboards, and we do see the OPS plus. We do see, yes. We see like the K rates and everything like that. And so I do think that there is a concerted effort to kind of drag the fans along, whether we want to or not. So, like, you know, good on teams for saying, like, hey, y'all go learn these numbers one way or another.
they do matter. And you know, Charles Barkley said this, and people, like, obviously they take everything he says with a grain of salt, but he made the comment that analytics is just another way to say stats. And that's absolutely right. Analytics, especially in baseball, are just a combination of certain stats that we already know and are familiar with.
Yeah.
And they just give you a better way to tell the story. And so, like, I'm with you. I think one thing I love about the Braves is that when you go to a Braves game, they put the lineups up. And, you know, from, I would say, back in the day until maybe 2015, 16, it was always the batting averages.
Yep.
But when you go to the Braves games, it's OPS. Every single player. Yeah.
So yeah. I went to opening day for the Reds. It was OPS. Like, it was their career OPS for that day, but it was OPS.
Yeah.
Same thing in Queens with their giant scoreboard that we only play Mario Kart on and don't actually talk about baseball on. it's all OPS up there. Same thing with, like, even, like, pitching, like, ERA. ERA is, like, not really important in the way that we want it to be, but, like I said, we're in a place to where now we have so many numbers that like baseball is a data science now, and it's not just like the Moneyball sabermetrics type thing where it's hey, this guy gets on base. It's not that anymore. It's hey, this guy gets on base. This guy's speed around the bases is this. This guy, the amount of times this guy strikes out is this. The amount of times this guy can hit into a wind tunnel is this. The amount of times that or the dimensions of the ballpark are this. And so it behooves a hitter to hit like this, like this here and this here. We even have like, you know, we talk about like Triple Alley out in San Francisco, and we're talking about how difficult hitting is in Citi Field, or the way the wind blows in Chicago when we're going towards the Ivy, and all of these things. They not only inform the betting analytics, they inform us about every possible outcome when it comes to an at bat. And I'm a numbers guy. Like, I'm not a numbers guy today, because this is this is kind of a shotgun pod. But like me, you know, when it's all four of us, me and Court, we're the numbers people who are throwing numbers back at each other and just having such a fun time with it. So I'm all for this analytics revolution in which we are finally talking about all of the numbers, because you know, we see it in other sports too, where people almost get offended by the numbers because they kind of take it as a revenge of the nerds type thing. But like, baseball has always been for the nerds, which like kind of makes it where this is no longer it's no longer something that's like this unknown for people. Like, it's a known now. And like I said, whether people want to or not, we're going to drag the fan base of baseball into this super analytics era, whether they want to be or not. And like, this is me telling people, get on the wave. We're here. Get on the wave.
If there's any sport where you need it, it's baseball. Because think about this. I always think about this. Every football is 100 yards. The end zone is 10 yards. Every basketball court is 96 feet. When you step on a baseball field, you have some of the most unique dimensions at every stadium.
And so you can change it at a whim as long as they fall within whatever. Because Orioles Park has changed, or Camden Yards, Orioles Park has changed like three times in the past three years.
Yeah. And then on top of that, when you bring in the different dimensions, you bring in the wind, you bring in the location of the stadiums. The only thing that's certain, and I've been looking at this because I'm a White Sox fan and I want us to turn our stadium toward downtown. Yeah, White Sox fan now. Let's not do this. But no, like, there's a compass that MLB sends out to every stadium, every team that's looking to build a stadium, because your stadium pretty much has to sit between north and east for the sake of the sun. I didn't know this at first. Really? I've saved the picture, but I'll send it to you. But they have to sit in a certain direction in relation to where North America sits for the sake of the sunsets. Like, they have to. They don't have a choice.
That's so cool.
But like we just said, baseball is one of the few sports where you can really nerd out about everything. And you're going to find what you're looking for. So that's going to be interesting. But I agree with you. I think it's, you know, more and more. I tell people all the time, Keith Law wrote a book called Smart Baseball. If you get a chance,
I have that on book. My bookshelf. I haven't actually cracked it open yet.
It's a great book, because I coming into reading the book, I was still stuck on all of my old school, man, just give me batting average, all this, that, and the third. But when you see somebody actually break down why these things don't really matter, how we were taught they matter, especially like stolen bases. When he started talking about when you get to the chapter about stolen bases, text me, bro, because it's insane. Because he was pretty much like, yo, unless it's a guaranteed steal, why the hell are you stealing? Like, a player moving, I forgot the exact numbers, and we're getting back on our nerd stuff, but like going from first base to second base only increases your chances to score by like, I want to say like 12%. It's something tiny. It's something minuscule. Yeah. And so it was like, he basically, his argument was like, yo, Ricky Henderson, cool. You're Ricky Henderson. I know you're going to get that base, but the mid-speed guy on your team, stay your ass at first base.
So again, this goes back to the analytics of the NBA. they're talking about, oh, the mid-range is dead, the long two is dead. No, it's not. You just want your most elite players taking the long two in situations where you can't get a layup or a three. And unless you are Steph Curry, Devin Booker, Cade Cunningham, Jalen Brunson, unless you're within that top 10, 15 guy, and top 10, 15 is me being generous. That is incredibly generous just because I wanted to add Jalen Brunson in there. Let's go Knicks. unless you're within that, like, that certain class of player, don't take a long two. Stop. Like, don't do it. It's a bad shot.
Yeah, like, and that's the thing. Like, it's more, we can get it on the same page with that, because a lot of us agree with some of the things in analytics. It's just the arrogance that people present analytics with that turns off a lot of people, in my opinion. But hey, I think, man, baseball, for all of you who love numbers,
it's the mother analytics, I think. Yes.
Baseball, this is like, if you're really into numbers and things like that, this is really the place for you, the place to be. Obviously, we're gonna do it every week, especially when we got the full crew. But no, this is really it, man. Like I said, Murakami, having a guy like this on my team, which I haven't had since Adam Dunn, a true three outcome guy, home run, strikeout, walk. And Adam didn't walk as much as Murakami does. It's exciting to see, and I'm really excited to see where the White Sox go with this, because, you know, when you got Murakami, you got Colson, you got Kyle Teal coming back, you have a lot of players, and that pitching staff is looking really good. I don't want to say talk too soon, and I'm not going to dwell on the White Sox because we got a couple more topics before we get out of here. But man, I think it's going to be a good problem to have. But speaking of problems, we got the Ohtani conundrum, and that's what I'm going to call it, because for me, it's not a problem, but I'm going to present it in the way that Major League Baseball has talked about it.
Just before I get on whatever high horse I'm about to get on, it's not a problem.
Yes. For those who don't know, you have Craig, the Chicago Cubs manager, actually, Craig Counsell. He made a comment referring to it being interesting that Shohei Ohtani does not count for two spots on the roster. So technically, the Dodgers have an extra pitcher. And so he goes, I don't understand why they do that. We saw some people who were commenting, like, why does Shohei get extra time to warm up in between innings when he's in the batting lineup? And just basically people finding any way they can to hate on the Dodgers. So firsthand,
we can do that ethically. Like, we can do that without.
We can just say, I'm tired of you kicking our ass. We can just go there. Yeah. But no, let's talk about the actual question at hand here. Okay. And I'll just be direct. Do you think Shohei Ohtani should count for two roster spots?
No. He's one player. He's one player, and like, that is the luxury of having that's the luxury of having Shohei Ohtani. Like, tell someone else to do it. No one is stopping anyone from being a two-way player like that. Oh, well, sucks. Like, the Mets, they have Nolan McLean and Carson Benj. And Carson Benj was a pitcher in college and pitched better than Nolan McLean. Nolan McLean was a hitter in college and hit better than Carson Benj. And they both stopped around double A, because it wasn't sustainable for both of them. That's part of Shohei Ohtani's greatness. That is like saying Steph Curry should count for two roster spots because he's a combo guard. Like, that's dumb. I hate it.
No, I agree 100%. I think it's one of those things where when you see something that's rare, when you see something that's not being done a lot, it's no need to hate on it. I understand that this competition. You can't sit there and just wag your finger, hey, that's not fair. Like, he's doing something, like, he's literally being compared to Babe Ruth. And I'm not a big Babe Ruth guy by any stretch of the imagination, but he's being compared to Babe Ruth.
The numbers are the numbers.
Yeah,
the
bro. Like, stop.
Like, if Tungsten Arm or Doyle want to count for one spot, we got to let them.
Yeah.
Like, whatever.
And I just want to see, I want to see teams try to beat the Dodgers. I know, you know, it's taking them a second to come around, but the pitcher who signed with the Astros who said, I don't want to join the Dodgers, I want to beat the Dodgers. That needs to be the mentality. Yes. That needs to be the mentality of Major League Baseball. Stop crying. Stop complaining. Go out there, get the players, put the team together, and beat them. Like, I don't want to hear this no more.
Neither do I. And it's simply because, like, we're competitors. And this is, like, every day is a fight with us in a group chat and everything like that. Like, we're always trying to one-up each other one way or another. Like, that is what competition looks like. That's what fun is. Like, we have so much fun talking about baseball. We have so much fun watching baseball. We have fun talking mess to each other in baseball based off something that we have no control over.
Zero.
Like, bro, let the Braves lose 3 games in a row. I promise you, I'm in your phone ASAP.
Nonstop.
Let the Mets be bad. I promise you, you're in my phone ASAP, bro. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm so tired of the, we can't do anything about it. Yes, you can. Win.
Yeah, it's that simple, fight bro.
Them. Do something. Throw a punch. Do something. Like,
spend some money. Like, try. Put some effort forward, man.
Again, this is why, like, every year people ask me, yo, you think the Mets can do it? Yes, I do. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care.
I agree, bro. I agree 100%. Yeah. So we're gonna see where that goes. And you know, it's an interesting conversation, but it is a conversation that will be here for a while. Hopefully it does not lead to our next lockout, but
you know it is.
Yeah, we said on the first episode, it's pretty much a given.
Bro, but we have Steve Cohen rules, we're gonna have Shohei Ohtani rules. This is dumb.
Yeah, it's stupid. But now let's close it out here. Our last topic, we'll only spend a couple minutes on this because it's still a few years away, but as we all know it, the MLB has talked about it. The WNBA is currently doing it. Major League Baseball is going to jump on the expansion train soon. We've talked about this for years. We've expected it. And, you know, I'm not going to lie. With the game growing the way it's growing, I know the records in the American League look bad right now. But the fact that baseball is at an all-time high. So I actually wouldn't be opposed to 2 new cities to go visit. So it sounds kind of cool, bro. So what I'm going to do, and I'm going to read the list because they named 10 teams. I mean, 10 uh-huh. cities, rather. They named 10 cities. We'll pick two. So I'm gonna name the 10. I'll pick my two, and then you pick your two, and we can just go ahead and go home from there.
Okay.
But, okay. So here are the 10 teams, 10 cities. Charlotte, North Carolina. Montreal, Canada. Oakland, California. Nashville, Tennessee. Orlando, Florida. Portland, Oregon. Raleigh, North Carolina. Sacramento, California, Salt Lake City, Utah, and Vancouver, Canada. Those are your 10. Those are your 10 cities. And my two, before I just hand it over to you real quick, I got to go Portland. I think Portland finally deserves a chance at another professional sports team. And they also have the ownership group in place with Russell Wilson and a few other guys who want to build that team. They want to build a stadium on the water in Portland, Pacific Northwest. I would like to see Portland. That's one of mine. And the second one I really struggle with, because I know they said things have, you know, tempered off in Nashville. It's not growing as much as it was. So I'm going to give you another city. I'm not going to go with Nashville.
I think we're going to say the same thing.
I think Raleigh, North Carolina should get the second team, bro.
Oh, okay. We're not saying the same thing.
I think Raleigh, simply because I know a lot of people, and this is a little drive down, but I know a lot of people in the DMV who talk about the lack of professional sports teams in that overall area. And okay, then you bring it right down to North Carolina. I think Raleigh is right in that list. Like, you have the Hornets, but then you have the Knights, which are a AAA team. But yeah, you don't have another major sports team. They had the Hurricanes, but that's over in Charlotte. I think you put a baseball team in Raleigh as that city continues to grow. I think that would be amazing for North Carolina. So those are my two cities. Which two cities do you pick?
Okay, so first off, super disrespectful to the A's, like, being an expansion city.
Yeah, that's why I didn't pick them. Like, I would love to give them a team, but unless they get their team back, it's a lot like with Seattle. Like, yeah, it's cool that the Sonics are going to come back, but the Thunder are still the Sonics. The Thunder's like, come on. Yeah.
I love the idea of the Expos coming back. Like, love the Expos. But no, my first one, this is going to surprise some people. Salt Lake City, baby.
I thought about that one. I was this close.
I know you were. Yeah, I was the
same thing. I'm this. They got so many teams, and they have
a
billionaire who wants to
and not the only get team teams so good.
And like, here's my thing. Like, it's one thing because you know we both preach against this VC money coming into sports and private equity and the way they do business. But this guy in Utah is doing it the right way.
I hate it.
He's building it. I think they're about to get an MLS team that he owns as well.
They absolutely are.
A little baseball with the mountains in the background, man. I could see that.
Colorado part two. Oh, that would be so beautiful. And I would love to go. So I'm going to go Salt Lake City.
And
I'm thinking Orlando is such an ugly city.
No more Florida baseball. I'm sorry.
Florida baseball. You're right. It's too weather dependent in a way that we can't fix. So yeah, Raleigh is probably the answer. Yeah.
It makes the most sense, bro.
It does. And like, I love the idea of Nashville baseball too. And I would love, love, love another city stadium that's like only an hour and a half, two and a half, three from Louisville. But like that, it's not growing the right way. And it's even funnier that I think WWE just announced that they were doing a WrestleMania
in Nashville.
Nashville.
Yeah.
And so like I went to SummerSlam there in 2022, I believe. Yeah, that was the summer I moved to Louisville. I went in 2022 and it was so cool because all of like you could see the Preds Arena or the Capstone Bridge Arena, the Preds Arena from the bridge. And you could walk to where the Titans play. And I would love to see them carve out more space for that in the city. But I don't know how viable that looks and how long that would take, especially with another city stadium like that. But I do love my city stadiums because I love Camden. I love City Field. I don't love the Bronx Stadium, but I really, really, really like the Great American Ballpark.
And I will say this, not to cut you off, but former MLB pitcher Melvin Freeman and Hall of Fame manager Tony La Russa, they are part of the group in Nashville. And their plan is to put a ballpark in downtown Nashville. So,
anything Tony La Russa is part of, I want no parts.
I just had to let you know, bro. You start talking about downtown ballparks, I had to let you know. You know they are talking about it, but your boy Tony is the. And another reason I almost picked Nashville is because they wanted to name them the Nashville Stars after the Negro League team. So like you have your reasons there where it's like, okay, that would be kind of dope.
But
yeah, like that would be kind of fire. But
I'd be done hating.
I'll hate Tony La Russa for what he did to my young core in 2020, but that won't go away. But no,
you're a White Sox fan now.
We are on the precipice of some great baseball somewhere else in America, but I am just glad as we wrap it up that we've got some really good baseball, man. I understand that the American League records don't look like what they should be, but these have been some dogfights, and it's still early. We still got a lot of baseball going, man. And throughout the season, we're going to continue to link up here and hit you with everything you need. So, man, as usual, whatever you want to hear from us, let us know. We are active on social media. We do respond. We do respond respectfully most times, unless you get crazy. But usually we will respond in a respectful manner, you know.
I'm letting y'all know now. Do not talk to me about the Mets online. That's the easiest way to get a Frank thrown. Don't do it.
Right.
This is my boundary setting. This is your boundary setting. Talk to me about baseball. Talk to me about the Guardians. Talk to me about Chase DeLauder. Talk to me about Kevin McGonigal. Talk to me about anything other than the Mets. Unless you have nice things to say. Because otherwise, not going to be able to do it.
Yes. And if you want to talk to me about the White Sox, the Braves, at this point, it's a lot of good baseball in Chicago. So if you want to talk to me about the Cubs, I'm in a good mood. I'll talk to you about them too. Man, but nah, I said, bro, I appreciate you for checking in with me. You know, the hate is gone today. There's no hate today. Nowhere. Y'all know where to check us out, man. Barbershop Crew on Twitter and Instagram. Subscribe to the Patreon. And for all other things Barbershed Network, make sure you check us out at thebcnet.com. That's me, Dante Miles, my boy Sid, and we'll see y'all next week.